Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the nation's capital, it's Quintessential Listening, Poetry, with host Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram.
My guest tonight is Bess. I've heard this person, this young woman, perform, and I was struck, thunderstruck. And I'm glad that she's with us tonight to share her work. Bess, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks so much, Michael, for having me.
You're more than welcome. Why is poetry important?
Thank you so much. Opening with the big one. Why is poetry important? I think this question is really important at this particular moment, because I think I'm going to try and answer the question by exploring it a little. Poetry is important, I think. First, we have to ask what poetry is, and I think that poetry is language that intervenes in some way. And I think that poetry is important because it creates space for those interventions.
Right. What are some of the predominant themes in your work?
A lot of my work looks at issues of identity and how we come to understand ourselves and our place in the world. A lot of my work looks at storytelling from the Middle East. I've spent a lot of my adult life living in Turkey. And so some of my, and I have Arab American heritage, and so some of my work tries to bring that part of the world to life in a way that may be surprising for people unfamiliar with the region.
All right. Well, please share one of your works.
Okay. I think I'll start with a piece that's called Mideast Best West, A Manifesto, which I wrote just in the last few weeks. Where I come from, some people say East Coast, Best Coast, or West Coast, Best Coast. And where I come from, some people say Midwest, Best West. Best West, Mideast, Best West, Fixed. Now, I'm not one for binaries, but if you look closely, you'll see that through the insertion of an alleged opposition, the lack thereof becomes explicit. An issue of logic. See, any untrained navigator opening the compass application on a smartphone can tell you that North is an elusive motherfucker. The needle shakes and slides and spins. You have to know where to look. See, I went looking in the books of the stories of the past. What is this thing they call West, and how can East be the middle of it? In school, I was told stories about great places called Greece and Rome, and it was from those great civilizations that ours arose, the West. I went to the museum with Keita, and we stared down at the mummies, but if makeup started in Egypt, why is there so much here in the West? Why does my pharaonic Phoenician goddess grandma never apply any? See, we were brought up to split, to taxonomize, this or that, he or she, yes or no, black or white, right or wrong or left, east or west, but I am a Mid-East-Western Gemini, not Janus, but multiplicity. See, I wandered the foothills of Anatolia, taking time to read placards or taking pictures to read them later, describing the significance of the stories I've journeyed to see. I am transported. Friends, family, and geography books say I'm in the Middle East, but in the belly on the field, placards read a story the school books called West. Vendi, vidi, vici. I came, I saw, I conquered in a quaint countryside many Turks even regard as too east to bother visiting Justinian's bridge. Still carrying thousands of stories, haven't managed to penetrate the skulls of Nimwits carving stories, presuming their ballasts cast somehow elsewhere. How can Midwest be best west when west is a constructed space-time continuum just like Justinian's bridge? Anachronism. Now, I'm not one for binaries, but if you look closely, you'll see that through the insertion of an alleged opposition, the lack thereof becomes evident. End.
Very nice. When did you first
Thank
start
you.
Writing? When did you first start writing?
You know, I started writing as a very young girl. In elementary school, I think I was more emotional than other children possibly. But, you know, my mother always encouraged me to write my feelings, and that very quickly evolved into actively trying to write poems from a very young age.
Please share another piece of your work.
Okay. I'm going to read a piece that I wrote actually in 2015 that's called On Borders. Okay. On Borders. There are borders we do not cross. We build walls. I can draw a line in the sand, but you can tug the tripwire snug, a bleak landscape, crossable, uncrossed. There are borders we do not cross. We build walls. There's routine. There's cable. I speak the language. I have money. There are borders we do not cross. We build walls that extend as high as our comfort zones. The wall is a blanket, a too easy unease, misleading us to think that our comfort is valuable. Dare I say, unbreachable, crossable, uncrossed. There are borders we do not cross. We build paywalls. Username and password, single ticket entry to see how many have died. There are borders we do not cross. We build walls. So if a baby dies and a Western photographer is there, then maybe you will know his name, say his name, maybe for a week, until it is lost in the timeline accessible by scrolling down your wall. Crossable, uncrossed. There are borders we do not cross. We build dams. Dams the voyager, unable to see his voyage. There are borders we do not cross. We build walls, brick by brick, petition by petition, check or by money order. Someone lied, told you it helps another brick in the wall, crossable. Uncrossed, there are borders we do not cross. We build walls. I am me, and you are she, and he is he, and there are borders between us, borders we do not cross. We build walls, crossable, uncrossed. There are borders We do not cross. We build walls, stacks of documents, piling in reams, bursting at seams with blank spaces for signatures, lines stretching at bottoms of pages, down hallways and looping around embassy courtyards. There are borders we do not cross. We build fences, spikes and shockwaves, perched atop twisted black gnarls that growl and bark upon contact. There are borders we do not cross. We build the walls of detention facilities, old prisons and hospitals. Keep disease in. Keep filth in, they say, but the sickness is the wall, and the borders we do not cross extend as far as the shards of walls bombed out, buildings concealing the culprit behind the walls of UN meeting salons. Crossable, uncrossed. There are borders we do not cross. We build walls, vision obstructed, paths obstructed, justice, dignity, unity obstructed, crossable, uncrossed. There are borders we do not cross. I was always too small to see over the wall, but brick by brick, there are peepholes to see the borders we crossed by tearing down walls.
That was incredible.
Thank you so
how does
much.
A poem how does a poem begin for you with an idea, a form, or an image in your mind?
The poem I just read is actually a good example of how my process tends to work in that regard. I often will begin with either an image or a phrase that I then try and play with and find different ways to address that phrase or different ways to express what that phrase might contain for people or different ways the poem can reflect what that phrase might bring to a given conversation. And so this is a good, this last piece I did is a good example of that, where there's the kind of incessant repetition, but a delivery of different images, between that repetition or different stories maybe.
Okay. Well, let's take a brief break and we'll be right back.
Okay.
My name is Michael Anthony here, Ingram. I'm here with Bess. The telephone number is 646-787-1631. If you'd like to call in and ask Bess a question. Bess, where do you write?
These days I write on my porch most often,
okay.
I think. I like to be outdoors when I write. Whenever I can, I try to be outdoors. There's a big intersection that goes by there, so that I get traffic noise a little bit. There's always people coming and going, so it's a nice place to sit and think in.
Right. One question for you. Poets tend to have favorite poets that they visit often. Can you suggest for our readers, for our listeners, some poets that you really like?
Yeah,
it
could
absolutely. Be historical. Yes.
Sure. Well, I really came of age reading a lot of Arab American poetry and a lot of poetry by by female Arab poets. And so I have a small list here of people I had been thinking about to mention. One would be Naomi Shihab Nye, who was recently named the Youth Poet Laureate by the Poetry Foundation. She's been a really powerful influence ever since I was young. Another is Moja Kaf, who is a Syrian-American revolutionary poet, I would say. Suher Hamad is another. Zeina Hashembek is another. Zeina Azam is another. Refif Zayada is another, I would have to mention. All really powerful feminist Arab-American poets.
All right. So you're inspired by their feminism? By their feminist stance?
Both their feminism... by that and also by their use of language. I don't really make a distinction between their ideology and their writing. I think it's the way their message is conveyed and what's conveyed within that message are all one package for me. And so I find a lot of power in their words, and for me that is inspiring.
All right. Where do you hail from?
I hail from Ohio.
Okay.
But my the great state of Ohio.
Yes.
From the Toledo area. I have to shout out. But my mom's family emigrated to the United States from Egypt in 1967. Mm-hmm. And my dad's family emigrated mostly from Germany and from England and Scotland throughout the early mid-1800s. So from a lot of places.
From a lot of places. All right. Well,
yeah.
Please share another of your works.
Okay. I thought I'd do two short pieces this time around to give our listeners a little break, maybe.
All right.
But here's a short one called Happy Hour that I wrote in April of 2019. Happy Hour. People love stickers. Participation stars as stairs they climb, self-reproducing lab rinse of ego twine, dense and musty. What limb can you lend that I may accelerate? End. And then I can do another one. This one was written about a year ago, and it's called United Citizens. And given that we're in Supreme Court season, that name I hope will ring familiar.
Yes.
United Citizens. A person is illegal. Illegal is person. Illegal is a person. Non-legal, un-legal, dis-legal, no-legal. A company is illegal. No, wait. No person is illegal. No company is illegal. No, wait. No person has rights. No company has rights. No, wait. No person has rights. No legal are rights. Non-rights are dis-legal. No company is illegal. Un-person is rights. Rights are company, yes. Rights are illegal. End.
What do you see as being the role of poetry in modern-day society?
Yeah, this brings us back to the question I think I wasn't really able to fully address at the beginning about poetry's role. I think poems provide a really useful vehicle for us to talk about the everyday in ways that are surprising or in ways that are maybe disorienting. Traditionally, a lot of especially really great American poetry has all these maybe pastoral scenes or scenes of everyday life, of love. I think people tend to have an association of the themes of poetry with those of the everyday. And what I think poetry provides in that space is a way to question the everyday, to take some assumptions or some approaches that the poet observed and maybe flip them, as I think that I tried to do in the last piece, or, you know, do other kinds of inversions that allow people to hopefully see an issue from a new perspective.
All right. What makes a poem good?
If it captures something for someone, I think. I don't think it takes much.
Okay. All right. How is your idea of poetry? Okay, please. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry.
I'm just excited. Please continue.
No. Sorry, I was just gonna say I was in the store in line, and someone behind me said, "This is DC, the District of Consumption." And he was talking to his friend, and I turned to him and I said, "Are you a poet? I don't know if you know, but you are." You know, I think any moment can spike poetry, and any person can be a poet. I don't want to diminish in any ways the great contributions of really great craftsmen or craftspeople, but I think anyone and everyone can and are poetic.
Right. You know, writers and poets write for a myriad of reasons. Some write primarily to speak a message to their audience. Others write because to stay silent is not an option. Why do you write?
I think both is a lazy answer, isn't it? But I write for a number of reasons, and they're not I write because I have to for myself personally. But
okay.
That's not necessarily the same as getting on the radio program with you and writing. I think there's a distinction there, but in both cases, I write because there's something I'm trying to figure out and something I'm trying to express. And I find that writing is a useful way to try and understand experiences. Sorry, can you ask the question a different way, maybe, or can I hear it again?
Yeah. Answer it the way that you'd like to answer it.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I think I write because. Can I read a poem to answer
yes.
your question?
Yes, that'd be fantastic. Yes, please.
Sure. Yeah, I think honestly, I think it's sometimes easier for me to express it in that.
Okay.
Way.
Yeah, I'm the same way. So I'm glad you're on this end of the questioning instead of me. So I understand.
Let's see. I have it. I'm so sorry. One second.
Oh, no. No problem.
Okay. This piece I wrote in the spring of 2011. It's called Layering, and it's a much earlier piece, and so I actually am curious to hear if people think they can hear a difference in style or how that evolution is, because this is a long time ago now. But I think this piece gets at the emotional aspect of what motivates my impulse to write poetry in particular, perhaps, that there's a sense that other forms of communicating aren't always effective in the ways I want them to be. And I hope that this piece shows that. Okay, this is called Layering. I wanted to find the balance between apathy and hyperactivism as I sat in middle ground. Flasks of would-be poets draped in a cashmere cotton blend of thrift store flannels and $400 boots. The boys have let their jawlines grow ragged. The girls' stockings are torn. We read blogs and Dostoevsky and Leibniz. We study art history and philosophy and literature, and our postmodern souls whine like MIDI keyboards and gears on road bikes. It's a drone, piercing the wail of a siren, almost as loud as the neon beanie hanging off the back of his expensive yet sloppy-looking haircut. The noise is oppressive, thicker than the layers of lightweight knits and wool cardigans and desperate iterations of individuality. Closets are full, leather backpacks are full, trust funds are full, inboxes are full, but we are barren. Biodegradable coffee cups made from 87% recycled material, empty. They lay strewn across the lawn, littering the bases of Adirondack chairs with cigarette butts and empty beer cans and any semblance of motivation. Isn't it ironic? Life requires no more perspective than that gained working on that organic farm last summer. A litter of piglets crowding around a sow's great swollen tit, sucking down fair trade coffee, sucking down Parliament spirits, sucking down handcrafted microbrews, sucking down Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter. We absorb, we consume, we suck. Under the layers from grandma's closet and prep school pretension, under the organic dark chocolate delicately drizzled over the hand whipped cream from the grass-fed cow down the road, through the haze of brain pills and smoke, through the grating din of 24/7 information, I hope there is a voice that has something to say. I wonder what will happen when we realize that sustainability isn't just a cute catchphrase to throw parents' money at. And I wonder what would happen if we stopped mocking the occupiers and joined them instead, or if we'll decide they're legit once we graduate. And I wonder what will happen when we recognize the oppression and occupation that makes my summer on the kibbutz possible. And I wonder if we'll ever stop using the deterrence of terror as an excuse to ostracize, demonize, and terrorize others. Comfort and convenience are the layers that keep us warm. For now, we gulp the slightly charred ground beans of entitlement, and I can't stomach it. It's too bitter. I'm worried about my liver. And
wow. You know, you remind me of myself.
Thank you. That's very kind.
Just for the reason that,
you know,
I believe that I write to speak a message to my audience, and I write because to stay silent is not an option. So there's a qualitative difference between my speaking voice and my written voice. You seem to come alive when you're reciting your work. Your work leaps off the page as you're reciting it. What is the qualitative difference between the two, between your writing and your speaking? What do you think that is? What causes that?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this a lot, and I think that I really appreciate you asking this question because it's given me a real opportunity to reflect on that. And I think that speaking and writing are different kind of modes through which our what we want to express is communicated, right? We have a written form and an oral form. And there are all these different tools that allow us to craft those forms respectively. So in speaking, we have pitch, we have tone, we have all these kind of almost dynamics, right, like musical qualities that we can use to describe the way a poem can be presented. But then in writing, in the written form, we also have all these other kind of interesting tools like font, or, you know, what is it on the, is it going to be on a screen or will it be printed on the page? All these other kinds of questions that come into play. I feel more comfortable in the speaking voice because of my control over the other kinds of the way that the audience interacts with the piece. I feel like on the page, I don't have the same command over those skills, and I don't necessarily know how to manipulate font in a way that will be more inviting to the reader, for example. But I do have a background in singing and acting that I think has helped me try and communicate my poems as effectively as I can orally.
Well, you know, it's one, I believe that poetry is a lived experience, and that if you are reciting your work, that it's important to live it because it's yours, that it, mm-hmm. it emanates from you. So, again, you remind me of myself, and that makes me feel good.
Thank you. Thank you. I see very much patterns in the way that you and I have been thinking about these different questions.
Yeah, fun. Very nice. Would you share another piece with us?
Sure. This one is called After Muhammad, and it's for a friend. After Muhammad died, I did the only logical thing. I went to the cemetery for black Civil War soldiers, now mostly desecrated with ball fields and dog shit. I came to the cemetery of the not properly appreciated, the voices not heeded, did not feel listened to, covered over, plotted in by a slope restoration plan. Hold it in, paint it over. Site the cemetery reminds us is only as is chosen, selected, framed, fought for. Over the hill, there is a river with a bridge and a path, and interspliced histories few here interrogate. When Muhammad died, I did the only logical thing. I walked from the park to the used bookstore. Stories wait, unread pages by the forgotten, the abandoned, the resold. Ya Rabbi, Ya Rahmat, Ya Ummi, but I am tired too, Muhammad. Carrying you now too with me, know that we will not rest for your peace. This the would-be ghazal I couldn't yet write, this the message sent too late. But know that you taught me their power. Over the hill there is a river with a bridge and a path, and interspliced histories too few here interrogate. And
have you ever been published?
You know, I've done a couple small pieces online, and I have had a few of my pieces recently published in a zine that is published out of Istanbul, actually. It's called Art is Dead Zine, and there's an arts collective there that I was involved, still am involved with, but was working with when I was living in Turkey. And they've published some of my poems in the last few months.
All right. If you were given the opportunity to get published in a wider audience, and to do mm-hmm. book signing anywhere you want it, what cities or countries would you definitely place on your book tour?
Oh wow! In the dream world.
In a dream world.
Beirut for sure. because Beirut has a really vibrant, really beautiful poetry scene. And there's a lot of language play, and people are speaking three different languages in one sentence. They're Arabic, French, and English. And so that would be a very fun, exciting place to perform. Definitely Ankara, if I could. Ankara feels like a second home for me, so Ankara for sure, the capital of Turkey, and London, because I've never been.
All right, all right, I like that. But well, please share another of your works.
Okay. How about Up and Out? Does that sound good? The one I did last week?
Okay, yes, sounds fantastic.
Okay. This is called Up and Out, and I wrote it a little over a year ago. Walk up, they command. Walk up, they command. The generation that birthed the drive-through says, stay seated. Imagine that. Out is dangerous, criminal, they say. But ask them why so and see where that goes. They say pay up for the merch of hashtag the resistance. They say pay up with our futures while their profit margins go up. Woke swag will only get you loose change. Rules must be broken in order to fix them. Kid, don't listen to your mama. Don't wait for no somebody to never maybe save you, kid. Don't let them even try to gaslight your torches. No if, but when, because where out is, we always ask why. Come across the train tracks, kid. Come taste things more important. Come on outside. See, not everyone understands what it is that bread or tree branches or truth speakers do, but we read Maya. We rise. You gotta get out to go up, up and out. Our one outside. So walk right on up to the bullies and tell them that their pleasure is not more valuable than your suffering. Tell the bad guys their freedoms don't supersede your rights. Tell those mean boys to put down their toys. Walk up and tell them that no one is having fun anymore, and it is now time to go play outside. To walk, we must first awaken. But the dawn comes only when you bring it, friends. Welcome to the upside, kiddos. Good to see you all outside for a change. End.
I love that piece.
Thank
piece.
You.
All right.
Thank you so
Let's
much.
Take a brief break, and we'll be right back.
All right.
Back. I'm Michael Anthony Ingram. I'm here with Bess. The telephone number is 646-787-1631 if you'd like to call and ask Bess a question. You know, Bess, all poets have several words that come up over and over again, words or sentences that they just can't help but put into their work. What are three of your most of your absolute favorite words to use?
Oh, my.
Maybe more than three.
What a wonderful. Yeah, I haven't. I mean, yeah, I love repetition. So I've been thinking a lot about. I was just thinking about doing a piece that has some repetition. I think I don't know so much about words, but trees and birds are often things that I talk about directly. I use the word teta a lot, which is a word that is not English, so I should maybe explain at some point. Teta is the Arabic word for grandmother. And a lot of my poems make references to my Egyptian grandparents. And so I use the words like teta and giddo, which are the terms for grandmother and grandfather in Egyptian Arabic dialect. So those are the ones that people maybe aren't familiar with that they've been hearing. Otherwise, I think, yeah, I have to think about that question again, Michael. That's
okay.
A good one.
Okay. You know, when I write, I try to write three poems at one time. Don't ask me how I do it.
Really?
But I try to work on three different poems at a time. Images that come to mind, I'll just write
that's
them down, jot them down. Do you have a special ritual that you go through when you prepare to write?
Not necessarily, no. My writing style varies. I try generally to set aside time for writing, usually in the evenings after work these days. But my favorite would be just to wake up in the morning and sit with a cup of coffee. But yeah, but I try to – usually I'll have a spark of inspiration, though. I have a very hard time as much as I would like to plan out my writing, I often feel that with my poems in particular, it's often that I have something stuck in my head, a word or phrase, or there's a particular thing I've been thinking about that all of a sudden I find a new way to I approach it in a different way and have to write that down or I do often do keep notes, though, of things that could be poems, but sometimes they become them, sometimes they don't.
I can understand that.
Yeah.
What style of poetry do you prefer? Rhyming, freestyle? What kind do you prefer?
I was really influenced when I learned about Jack Kerouac using the term spontaneous prose to describe his writing style, because that's definitely a way that I go about it personally, in that it is very much, as I just described, in a kind of in-the-moment flow of writing. Are you there?
Yes. Are you there?
Oh, sorry. Yep.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, would
about
you
that.
Favor us with two poems back to back? They can be long or short. I just want to hear your voice again.
Sure. Okay, I'll do a longer one called I Would Like to Inform You That. Well, I'll do one called Free Speech, and then I'll do one called I Would Like to Inform You That. And I'll say when I get to the second. Thanks. Free speech. In bursts and sputters, soft, bubbling, flowing, gentle, and glittering, spewing or growling, barking like a dog, howling at the moon like a dog, groaning or crying or mourning, creaking open like swollen wooden doors, floating like birds, My voice is my wind, is my rain, is my voice beckons you, threatens you. My voice alone does not yet know the anthem of my heart. My voice is a gnarled cord wrapped tight around my throat. My heart is on my sleeve, in my words, my signs, my prayers, my lies, my songs, my cries. Now the bird's wings don't lift as they did. My voice can barely raise above a whisper. And I chose that piece in part because I actually, now that I think of it, brings up a lot of the words that I repeat to answer your previous question. The dogs, birds, mm-hmm. wind, and doors, actually. I have a number of pieces that somehow get at this notion of doors either being open, closed, shut, every which way, okay. certainly.
All right.
And then,
right.
And then, can I actually do three, Michael?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll do four or five if you like. I'm enjoying listening to you, so whatever you like to do, I'll just sit back and you just recite.
Yeah.
Just
no, no. No, no. I'll do one more. We'll do a. We have time, right? I think.
All
so.
Right.
Okay. Thank you so much. This is, I would like to inform you that. The vice deputy of the imperial authority stood before the assembled throng, perched atop a container containing self-care products made from extra-propriated minerals, and informed them that they were unable to proceed with any official business until such a time that the business was resolved. I would like to inform you that official business, as you know, is very official. It is now officially too sensitive a juncture for all of the officiality of our business to be resolved. Once the business is resolved, we can get down to the matter of resolving the business. I would like to inform you that as the associate assistant stood before the gathered masses and mediated the bicameral demands of the pluralistic singularity, they were warned of demographic realities which threatened the integrity of the structure. I would like to inform you that demographic realities is a term employed at the axle of progress, winding futurity up into itself like a ribbon, challenging us to unfurl their categorical violence with our radical love. We must never forget. We are the masses. I would like to inform you that the leader broadcast ahistorical poppycock as the structure entrenched with not one shred of integrity. Multifaceted contours were constructed with mortar and prefab units paid for with the shillings of the masses. The business was already being resolved, you see, before any business could be resolved. I would like to inform you that as the leader demanded a dove that he might extend an olive branch, conscripted hands strangled any creature that doth take flight. I would like to inform you that doves were required to go to flight school. There was much paperwork involved in breaking just the right number of bones such that the dove becomes a what? A dove is not a duck sitting waiting for a goose. I would like to inform you that as the king's council conspired, construction booms were created, bulldozers and cranes and barriers, they call them. It's nicer that way. I would like to inform you that a piece of paper is not a structure, is not a map. There are many requirements for dove work. The most important one is to be either a duck sitting or a dove, broken. I would like to inform you that a dove stood at the barrier and the lieutenant's field deputy's associate assistant intern examined its documents. The dove calmly explained the inalienability of human mobility and was turned back. The business was already being resolved, you see, before any business could be resolved. But I would like to inform you that birdsong is overheard by masses who stand assembled to see their emperor naked. End. Thanks.
All right. Got one more piece?
Sure. Yep. This one I wrote in 2015 when I was living in central Turkey and volunteering with, volunteering with refugees. I met a man who was very striking, and thinking about our interaction later, I wrote this piece. And its title is in Arabic, and the title is Ya Ustaz, or Oh My Teacher, but in English I call the piece Today I Met a Man from Mosul, which is a city in northern Iraq. Sabah al-Khair, he cried out upon entering the meeting room. Sabah al-Nur, I replied. Morning of light. Fluorescent bulbs buzzed overhead, a blinding white. I am from Iraq, he said. From Mosul. Next came, I am a Christian. The twisting knots inside me churned as I tried to keep a professional demeanor, an appropriate demeanor. Anakinan, I offered. Me too. I'm Coptic, Ummi Masriya, alive. What do I know about being an Arab Christian? I flee headlines, not armaments. I flee nightmares. But today I met a man from Mosul who taught math at a high school for 29 years. He has three daughters, the youngest of whom is four. His mother also lives with him. She is 86 years old. Today, I met a man from Mosul, and I had a hard time trying to define the rules of definite and indefinite articles in English. What does definiteness mean? Today, I met a man from Mosul who wrote a paragraph which ended, I had to leave the Iraq because there were very big problems. Problems. When he read it to the class, he was interrupted as his mouth closed over that final word, problems, war, said a girl no older than I, calmly. Harb, I offered quietly in translation. The man from Mosul looked at her and slowly glanced across the table. Harb, he said. War, he said. In the silence that followed, I continued my new modus operandi. Closed doors, rusted, painted, engraved, key in the door. Don't think, 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 don't think that guilt not spoil the lesson. Definite knowledge of indefinite war. Today I met a man from Mosul, and as I watched him in class, I thought about my father. This man, only 2 years younger, diligently penning. He is tall. She has brown hair. Are you speaking? How do I tell of the man I met from Mosul sitting in my classroom who should be leading his own, as he did for 29 years. Today, I met a man from Mosul, and I didn't say what I should have. Lo samah, tafadhalu, please, please, after you. And
what have you learned about yourself, being a poet? What have you learned about, who are you as a result of being a poet?
Oh, I think, who am I as a result of being a poet? I think one thing that I do want to say is that I have realized how selfish I am. One thing that I don't often edit my pieces, but when I do, it's usually removing these kind of self-reflexive elements that are things that I absolutely learn from, but don't necessarily think contribute to the piece I just read is a really good example of that, actually, because in the original drafting of it, I kept saying, what could I know? And that was a refrain throughout the piece. But I found that when I eliminated that questioning and kept the focus on this teacher who I met, it did a better job of communicating what I was hoping to do with that piece. So as much as I speak of spontaneity, there's a kind of instance of the editing coming in also.
All right. Do you have another one to share?
Sure. Let's see. To finish, I think I will read the piece that is not an explanation of my name, but it talks about some of the themes that your last question brought to my mind.
All right.
And it's a piece that I just recently wrote as I came into this name, Best, that I'm using for my creative projects. And it talks about some of the ways that I try to use my poetry in that kind of emotional drive of the work. Beth. Mid-East Western Gemini twin. I am a dwarf god presiding over destruction and home, the battle and the field. I reap what I sow, and it is bitter, sweet, and sour. Portmanteau princess presiding over notebooks and screens, drafting dreams in ink and binary code undecipherable. My name cannot be rendered in my mother tongue. My mother's tongue was cut out by bullies, transnational, not just lifestyle, but life. I am trying to find the words to tell you of the place they call home. Not wrong, but not right. I still write enough. Mother of the world, crying half of the mother of my mother. Haiku Ryorum.
You know, we've almost reached the end of our poetic journey. But I would like to ask you one last question.
Sure.
When people hear your work, I know I've felt this way, they usually want more. What's next for you as a poet?
That's nice of you to ask, Michael. Thank you. Next for me, we talked a little bit earlier about trying to get something down on paper, and that's something I am actively trying to do. I'm hoping to release at least a chapbook later this summer. I don't want to say a certain date because I'm bad at deadlines, but I do want to try and get something out soon, and I'm looking forward to learning more and hopefully learning from you about how I can apply different places and get my work out there. So. I'll be performing next week, actually, here in Washington, if anyone listening is here in the D.C. area. I will be performing at an event for World Refugee Day at Bus Boys and Poets the evening of Sunday the 23rd. So next
weekend.
At
which Bus Boys and Poets?
14th and D.
Okay.
14th and D.
Okay. All right. Well, I'd like to thank you.
Thank you so much, Michael.
for being my guest.
I'd like to thank you. Thank you.
I'd like you to come back in the winter to share some of the work.
That'd be wonderful. Thank you.
All right. Well, good night, everyone. Take care. Good night, everyone. All right.
Thank you.